So beginning with verse 1 of the first chapter of Job, we read, "There was a man in the land of Uz, whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil." Job was a man. He was subject to the same desires, weaknesses, passions, and needs that we are. Job lived in the land of Uz. This land was east of Canaan, toward Chaldea, near the Euphrates River. The borders of this large area may have been near to Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham was from. Ur had produced a good man in the man of Abraham, and now we see that Uz also produces a good man in the man Job. It seemed that good men then, as now, were mingled with the bad, and the worse others were, the better this man was. As we mentioned, his name was Job. Various meanings have been given to the name Job. Some say it means one hated and counted as an enemy. Others say it means one who grieves or groans. And yet others say the name means to love or desire, showing how welcome his birth was to his parents. Yet there was a time when Job cursed the day he was born. So who can tell what a lifetime will bring in a baby with such a beautiful and innocent start? Job was a very good man, very religious, and living a life which was outstanding as an example to others. This verse 1 says he was perfect, not sinless, as he himself states in chapter 9:20, when if I say I am perfect, I shall be proved perverse, but he respected all of God's commandments and aimed at perfection, and any shortcomings would be due to human weakness and not due to a lack of moral integrity. He knew how to behave, and he desired to do what he knew. This verse also says he was upright. Upright in his dealings with both God and man. He was faithful to all his promises, gave wise advice, lived up to every trust placed in him. He certainly did not violate his conscience in what he believed to be right. And the verse also says he feared God. And this was the principle which guided his whole life. This is what made him perfect and upright. With his every action designed to please God, his worship coming from only the true God, and his energy spent constantly doing his duty. To fear God means to have a reverence toward his majesty, a regard to his authority, and a dread of his wrath. Proverbs 8:13 says, "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil." And this verse further says that he eschewed evil. That is, he shunned evil. He deliberately avoided evil. Proverbs 16:6, "By the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil." Job avoided evil and the opportunity to do evil. The second verse says, "And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. Job had a large family. Service to God was the major force in his life, but he was still a husband and a father. He fulfilled all the duties placed on one with such an obligation. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. This is one of the ways in which Job was prospered. Psalm 127 verse 3 says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." Even with a large family, though, Job still assisted others and was liberal to the poor. In Job 31:16-17, he says, "If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless has not eaten thereof." So Job had respect for the needs of others, even though he had obligations himself. The third verse says, "His substance also was 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 she-asses and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East." Job had a good estate. He could support his family and do good to others. His substance was considerable. Here the word substance means riches. He had a lot of riches. Job would be regarded by those in the world as being a rich man. However, the soul and the spiritual world regard these things as shadows. They are things that are not. Proverbs 23:5 says, "Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven." In Job's day, a man could have had as much land as he could stock. So Job's riches were not described in areas of land, but in cattle and servants. Land was of little value if it could not be made productive with stock. So his wealth is described in the amount of stock that he had. Job had a great household. Many people were employed by him and maintained by him. And this verse says Job was the greatest of all of the men of the East. Now, the men of the East were the richest people in the world. And Job was the greatest of all of them. In chapter 29, Job describes himself as a chief and a king. Job was rich and powerful, yet he was upright and honest and feared and worshiped God. His riches and high position and great household and large family and godly character are described before the story of his great afflictions to show us that none of these will keep us from the calamities of human life. We're going to have to undergo hardship and suffering, even though we may have all the riches of life. Religious devotion will not secure us, as Job's mistaken friends thought, and prosperity will not secure us, as the careless world thinks. We still have to go through the hardships and the sufferings. The fourth verse, Job 1 and 4, "And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one of his day, and sent and called for their three sisters to eat and to drink with him." Here we are given further details of Job's prosperity and devotion to God. In chapter 29, 5, Job remembered that some of his best memories were when his children were about him. His children had the practice of feasting together in their houses. This is the way grown children should be, in their houses, with their own families, enjoying each other's company. Good parents desire, promote, and rejoice in their children's prosperity and wealth. They like to see their children leading pleasant and respectful lives. Godly parents get great comfort when their children are in good health and enjoying a godly life, especially to see them live in love and unity and mutual feeling toward each other, with no quarrels among them, no underhanded dealings among them, no dishonesty, no shameful behavior, no deliberate disregard for God, but living upright, respectful lives, living lives that are full of moral integrity. It is good in the eyes of all parents to see children thus knit together. This is one of the ways Job was blessed. Yet what a dark cloud over the lives of those parents whose grown children are otherwise. That is the beginning of many sorrows for the parents. It, no doubt, gave Job more pleasure that the brothers sent for their sisters to feast with them. They had been men too modest to go without being sent for. Job's sons cared for their sisters and desired their company and their comfort. It seems that their feasts were so proper and so suited for godly people that their sisters were good company for them at the feast. They weren't doing anything there that would have been embarrassing for their sisters to be there and participate in. Job's children feasted in their own houses where they could control the situation and not have to be subject to the morals of the world. No doubt Job was invited to these feasts and would have been welcome, but for some reason he chose not to attend. Maybe his age was a factor, yet young people must fill out a youthful liberty, provided they flee youthful lusts. The fifth verse says, "And so it was, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, It may be that my sons have sinned, and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually." So we see here that Job had a great care for his children, and he did what he could for the good of their souls. Job was concerned about his children, that they may have in their having a good time, done something displeasing to God. He was afraid they might be guilty of sinning and have thoughts in their hearts which would be displeasing to God. We are most apt to do so, or to say something displeasing to God, when we are indulging in the flesh. Job was afraid that the intoxication of youth might cause them to forget or slight God, the giver of all their blessings. So in view of this, as soon as the feasting was over, he called them to a solemn religious service. There is a time for feasting, but there must also be a time for worship. He sent for them to prepare for the serious, solemn act of worshiping God. He sent and sanctified them, ordered them to examine their own conscience and repent of any sin they might be guilty of. They were to prepare themselves for worship of God. Thus Job kept some authority over them, and they submitted to it, though they were in their own houses. Still, he was a priest of the family, and at his altar they attended, knowing that their share in his prayers was more valuable than their share in his estate. Now, this is the time of the patriarchs. This is when God dealt with the heads of families, and he told them what to do, how to serve, and Job was the head of a family, and he was serving the way God told him to do. Parents should do all they can to encourage their children to be pleasing to God. Job offered sacrifices for his children to atone for their sins and to ask God for grace and mercy to preserve them. Job, like Abraham, had an altar for his family on which it is likely he offered daily sacrifices, but on extraordinary occasions, he offered more sacrifices than usual according to the number of them all. He had sacrifices for each child. Parents should pray for the individual needs of each child. When Job offered the sacrifices, he arose early in the morning, and we believe the children were present and involved in the sacrifices because Job sent and sanctified or purified them. Thus did Job continually, the Bible says. Now in verse 6, we're going to begin to see a different scene. Here we see the scene of God meeting with the angels. Verse 6 says, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also among them." One would think, since Job was so rich and great, so wise and good, so well set with family and devoted to God, so well grounded in faith and power, that Job was so secure with his mountain of prosperity that nothing could move him. But here in verse 6, we have storm clouds gathering, which will make a horrible hurricane of devastating destruction. And we must ever keep this in mind while we are dwelling in this lower sphere here on earth. The same clouds that gathered to bring about the problems of Job can also gather to bring about our problems. And this story of the sons of God assembling with Satan in their midst is something that's really difficult for us to understand. It just simply shows us that we do not know all the happenings in heaven. It's not intended for us to know, but these things are happening without Job's knowledge, but they're going to have a great effect on Job. We may be in the same position Job is in. Well, we'll talk more about this sixth verse in our next lesson. We must close at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.